Hi, and welcome to episode 3 of Between Sundays with Joe and Judy. We read Isaiah chapter 6 and 7, so that's what we will be going through in this episode. And we really, you know, chapter 6 was actually pretty small. It was only 13 verses, but we pretty much spent our entire small group talking about that one because they mention seraphim, and we just went on a huge, we went off on a huge tangent on angels and kind of just discussed what we knew and what we didn't know about angels. And then we read chapter 7 and went back to angels, really, and didn't really discuss it that much. So we'll kind of go over, recap what we talked about in 6, and then I will go ahead and read you all of chapter 7. So at least if you're part of our small group, you'll be caught up for our next session this week. So seraphim. Seraphim is mentioned in the very beginning of 6, verse 2. It says, attending him were mighty seraphim, each having 6 wings. With 2 wings, they covered their faces. With 2, they covered their feet. And with 2, they flew. And then we were just like, seraphim, okay. Well, the Bible mentions other angels, and they're not quite described this way. So it mentions archangels. Michael, I think, was an archangel, yeah. And it mentions cherubim. And so we were like, well, what is the difference between what they look like? And then we were like, well, if there's differences in between the way that they look, are there differences in between, like, the hierarchy of angels? And actually, if you've ever looked up, if you like Google a biblical angel, they're terrifying.
Yeah, they have a lot of wings and they're covered in eyes. And
yeah, we like told our one small group person, he's kind of into tattoos right now. And we were like, oh, this is definitely a back tattoo worthy.
I like the joke that with the angels, that's why they always have to give like disclaimer whenever they show up to the people is, hey, don't be afraid. I'm a messenger of God.
Yeah, because you would not necessarily know that.
Yeah, if I saw someone with a bunch of wings, a bunch of eyes looking at me, I'd be like,
yeah,
what's going on?
And it's funny because when we depict, like, if I asked you, like, describe an angel, you might describe, like, a muscular white man with long blonde hair and blue eyes, at least, and wings with a halo. That's what comes to my mind. Because I feel like that's, or there's a lot of like women angels depicted in things too, even though I don't think there's a lot of, if any, women angels in the Bible. So it's interesting. We got off on just a huge discussion of it because I was unaware. I don't know. I didn't really know that much about angels before. And angels seem so cool because they're messengers of God and they're coming to tell humans that God sends them to tell a message, and they're powerful and kind of scary looking. And so in my mind, they're like more, I don't know, not necessarily worthy, but like they're just more powerful than us. But as we were talking, we kind of concluded, actually, I think you, Joe, were one of the ones that brought it up, that like in terms of hierarchy, humans are above angels.
Yeah. So it comes down to this idea that angels, like humans are creation. God is our creator. And he also created angels. So, like, where does that kind of put us if we're both created? The big difference being is humans were created in God's image. We were created to be like him. And angels were, in my opinion, strictly my opinion, are created to serve a purpose. They weren't made to have the free will that we have. They weren't made to kind of come to God in the, like, father and children perspective. They are kind of like, I think the analogy I gave was, imagine, like, we all, as humans, get an invitation to the party. The angels are kind of there serving.
Yeah.
They're the ones that are kind of bringing the food to the table type thing.
Yeah.
So we're the guests. We're the guests of honor. The angels are important, but they are not as important as the guests.
Yeah, and they don't have the same relationship with God. I don't know if they view him as their father, like he tells us to view them. And there's actually There's this other podcast called Curiously Caitlin, and I believe she is a theologian, right?
Yeah.
Or yeah.
Yeah.
And she's like pretty heavy, works with the children at her church. And then she brings in guest theologians. It's a really kind of cool, cute podcast because they'll have a child send in a question and she'll basically just answer the question if she can. And she brings in theologians to like back it up. And sometimes you actually get an answer and sometimes you don't. But the whole point of it is like children can ask some very deep questions. They may word it differently than he would as an adult. But I mean, I work in the children's ministry at my church and I've experienced this too. They can ask some pretty powerful questions. And so there was one recently within like the last 2 months of Angels. And I listened to it and it doesn't deal with this like necessarily an exact question. The question the kid brought in was like, can angels be boys or girls? So that was the majority of how she answered it. But in answering it, she just talks so much about what the Bible tells us about angels and what theologians have studied about angels. And it was very interesting. So I'd say if you are interested in learning more about angels, she does answer the question if they're boys or girls as well. Go ahead and look up Curiously Caitlin on wherever you listen to podcasts. Unlike us who are just on Spotify right now, she's everywhere. Let us know what you think, because I found it pretty interesting.
Just real quick, I did want to, after our last episode, I was having a conversation with a friend of mine who mentioned a chapter in Revelation. And as I was reading through it, I happened to notice, oh, there's an angel there. And the angel said something. So I'm going to read that real quick. It's Revelation 22, verse 8. I, John, am the one who heard and saw these things. And when I had heard and seen them, I fell down to worship at the feet of the angel who had been showing them to me. But he said to me, do not do it. I am a fellow servant with you and with your brothers and prophets and all who keep the words of the book. Worship God. So it was just, that was just a real quick kind of further proving and saying the piece that angels are important, but they are strictly God's messengers. They are, as that angel said, fellow servants. And the big difference is, again, we are serving God, and we're working for our place in the creation space with him. We're looking to be in heaven and have a seat at the table, where angels, again, they have a purpose. Their worship and their allegiance to God is different from ours. So we're both important, but I would not say that angels are above us. Again, that's my opinion on that. But it was a good conversation. And yeah, there's many different angels that you're going to see throughout the Bible, and a lot of interesting and different descriptions of them. There's also mention that comes off my head in right before Sodom and Gomorrah got destroyed. I think we were talking about Sodom and Gomorrah a little bit last episode. God kind of came down in person, but there was also two messengers that were kind of in the shape of men. They just looked like men, and they were in the city, and the people wanted to do bad things to them. So I was just going on my tangent on angels.
Sorry, I had to run out and chase our kid back to bed really quick because we can only record at night and he loves to get up. Okay, so that was pretty much it for six. Oh, well, really a recap of six is it's actually pretty sad. God's kind of done with them and he's kind of like, the word I use was a little bit savage, but he's kind of done with them and tells Isaiah like, yep, they're going to be destroyed and you can let him know that.
I mean, a positive takeaway on six, because there's not a whole lot of positivity there, is Isaiah didn't feel he was worthy. And there is a scene where, in verse 6, then one of the seraphs flew to me with a live coal in his hand, which had been taken with tongs from the altar. With it, he touched my mouth and said, see, this has touched your lips. Your guilt is taken away and your sin atoned for. So God, God always prepares his people for what he wants them to do. And in this case, Isaiah said, you know, how can I speak if I'm, you know, a sinful person? And God provided a way via a coal that didn't burn him.
And another, I guess, positive would be when God is asking whom shall I send as a messenger to the people, and the message is not a pleasant one he's about to send. A lot of people would back away from this. I don't want to deliver such a terrible message. I mean, God has had many people that he's chosen to do things say, nah, I think you're choosing the wrong person. And Isaiah said, here I am, send me. So pretty brave, pretty powerful there as well. Okay, I will read chapter 7 for us. When Ahaz, oh, and I should do the disclaimer of, is there such thing as like a professional reader?
I mean.
No. You could, is the yes or no question?
I'm sure it has a name.
I am not one of them. And so I will do my best to pronounce these biblical names, but I am not a professional reader. When Ahaz, son of Jotham and grandson of Uzziah, was king of Judah, King Rezin of Syria, and Pekah, son of Ramaliah, the king of Israel, set out to attack Jerusalem. However, they were unable to carry out their plan. The news had come to the royal court of Judah, Syria is allied with Israel against us. So the hearts of the king and his people trembled with fear, like trees shaking in a storm. Then the Lord said to Isaiah, take your son, Shear-Jashub, and go out to meet King Ahaz. You will find him at the end of the aqueduct that feeds water into the upper pool near the road leading to the field where cloth is washed. Tell him to stop worrying. Tell him he doesn't need to fear the fierce anger of those two burned out embers, King Rezin of Syria and Pekah, son of Remaliah. Yes, the kings of Syria and Israel are plotting against him, saying, we will attack Judah and capture it for ourselves. Then we will install the son of Tobiel as Judah's king. But this is what the sovereign Lord says. This invasion will never happen. It will never take place. For Syria is no stronger than its capital, Damascus. And Damascus is no stronger than its king, Rezin. As for Israel, within 65 years, it will be crushed and completely destroyed. Israel is no stronger than its capital, Samaria, and Samaria is no stronger than its king, Pekah, son of Remaliah. Unless your faith is firm, I cannot make you stand firm. Later, the Lord sent this message to King Ahaz. Ask the Lord your God for a sign of confirmation, Ahaz. Make it as difficult as you want, as high as heaven or as deep as the place of the dead. But the king refused. No, he said, I will not test the Lord like that. Then Isaiah said, listen well, your royal family of David. Isn't it enough to exhaust human patience? Must you exhaust the patience of my God as well? All right, then, the Lord himself will give you the sign. Look, the virgin will conceive a child. She will give birth to a son and will call him Emmanuel, which means God is with us. By the time this child is old enough to choose what is right and reject what is wrong, he will be eating yogurt and honey. For before the child is that old, the lands of the two kings you fear so much will be deserted. Then the Lord will bring things on you, your nation and your family, unlike anything since Israel broke away from Judah. He will bring the king of Assyria upon you. In that day, the Lord will whistle for the army of southern Egypt and for the army of Assyria. They will swarm around you like flies and bees. They will come in vast hordes and settle in the fertile areas and also in the desolate valleys, caves, and thorny places. In that day, the Lord will hire a razor from beyond the Euphrates River, the king of Assyria, and use it to shave off everything, your land, your crops, and your people. In that day, a farmer will be fortunate to have a cow and two sheep or goats left. Nevertheless, there will be enough milk for everyone because so few people will be left in the land. They will eat their fill of yogurt and honey. In that day, the lush vineyards, now worth 1,000 pieces of silver, will become patches of briars and thorns. The entire land will become a vast expanse of briars and thorns, a hunting ground overrun by wildlife. No one will go to the fertile hillsides where the gardens once grew, for briars and thorns will cover them. Cattle, sheep, and goats will graze there. Let me remind you, too, that I'm reading from the NLT version, which is, I think, a newer version. So you probably are like, why does this sound so modern? Like, the word aqueduct, I don't think, was around. But this translation is, and maybe we'll have an episode on translations one day, because I know some people get confused by how many translations of their Bible there are. The message in them all is the same. This one helps me understand what I'm reading a lot better than trying to like understand old English words or just words I'm unfamiliar with. It kind of takes those words and makes it into what we would call them now, which is helpful to me. Some people don't like that, and that's perfectly fine. But that is what's helpful to me, which is why I read from it.
I always recommend when studying from the Bible, you probably should have two, maybe three different translations. Because in this case, there was a lot of stuff that was a little more clear in your translation. And then there is stuff that's a little more, I don't know, the precision in the NIV is a little more. So
yeah,
and the combination of the two is very powerful.
Yeah, and when we read on Thursdays on our group night, you know, everybody reads a little bit. We break up the chapter, and so we get to hear different translations. And so sometimes we'll be like, "Hey, so and so, what did yours say for verse 8?" Because it can kind of clarify things a little
bit.
Or sometimes it just adds a nice sounding poetry to it as well as someone else's.
Again.
So 7, we like didn't really talk about that much at all because we were so stuck on angels. But I did think I keep wanting to say premonition, but that's not what it is. The prophecy that he spoke of in starting in verse 14, talking about Jesus coming. Remember, this is Old Testament, so Jesus is nowhere near this right now, is pretty cool.
Yeah, this is a good example of how the Bible kind of goes in cycles. You'll see stuff throughout, like even reading the New Testament, you'll be like, oh, I've heard this before, or I've seen this before, and it's because it translates back to the Old Testament. In this case, this is the Old Testament, it's going to translate to the New Testament. Because obviously, in this vision, in this speaking, they're not going to have a virgin birth. Like, not in the time of any of the people that are living in this moment, right, at that second. So this is far off. So this is one of those cycles where, once again, Israel and Judah will be put in a bad situation and be kind of getting run over by their enemies. So it's kind of cool that happens. Looking at what Ahaz was talking about in, like, verse 10, again, the Lord spoke to Ahaz. Ask the Lord your God for a sign, whether in the deepest depths or in the highest of heights. But Ahaz said, I will not ask, I will not put the Lord to the test. God does allow us to test him. Like, not like, you know, hey, I'm going to jump off this building, make me fly. You know, that's not the test that we're talking about. But, like, we can, you know, push a little bit in our faith. And in this case, Ahaz decided he was going to trust men to help him with an accomplishment instead of trusting God, which God had already said previously, they're not going to overtake you. This is why. And Ahaz did not trust God and put his trust in the men, and ultimately the people would betray him.
Yeah, that's never a good idea.
Well, and in this case, it was the downfall of Judah.
Yeah.
So,
you know, one of the things when you said God does allow us to test him, one of the things that I've heard pretty much every pastor I've had throughout my life say is when it comes to testing God is with tithing. Mm. And they're like, you know, tithe for X amount of months and tell me that you don't see something change in your life. And Joe and I are like huge testaments to that. I mean, this is a completely separate tangent, but tithing is super important. And that is one thing. You start tithing and you're definitely going to see a change in your life. I'm positive of that.
Yeah, I haven't heard anybody say tithing broke me. I didn't have any money because I tithed.
Yeah, and it's and I and of all those pastors I've had, which has only been a couple actually, none of them have said, and you know, one time someone actually came back to me and said, this didn't work. It's like, no, it always works. It always works. One of the things that happened when we met and read six and seven is, well, Joe and I feel, anyway, Joe and I feel incredibly old. We're in our mid 30s, but we feel incredibly old when we're with our group because they say words we don't know.
Well, we know the words meaning other things, and all of a sudden,
oh yeah, they say the new hip lingo. So I thought it would be fun every time I hear one that I don't know, I tell you guys. Which I guess could also be slightly embarrassing, but I'm okay with that.
The kids might say it's cringy.
I don't know if they use cringy anymore.
That's
actually
very true. It might be how they do it this
yeah.
Point.
So glazed. I've never heard of that. And I look to this one girl, Lily, every time someone says something. I think she's the youngest in our group, actually. And she always tells me what they mean. So I didn't know that glazed was when you're like over hyping something. I don't even remember what it was in reference to, but one guy said to the other guy, oh man, you're so glazed. You're glazing that. And I was like, donuts were the only thing popping in my mind. And I was like, what does that even mean? And they're like, oh, Judy, it's when you over, and then they go into an explanation like I'm a senior citizen, but it's when you're over hyping something up. So there you go. If you didn't know, if you're with me in this and had no idea that's what it meant, now you know a new word and can communicate with the younger generation.
And if you already knew what that word meant, it means you're either young or you're keeping up.
Yes.
So good for you.
Good for you in both situations. Well, I think that wraps up this time. I know we've been releasing these kind of randomly. We'll get to a pattern eventually. But if you haven't subscribed, go ahead and do that. And then you're actually aware of when we release these if you're interested in listening. So thank you for joining us with this, and we'll be back next time, starting with chapter 8.
Jesus loves everybody. That's including you.